Global Take, America's number one podcast, where we discuss global issues from the Black perspective. It's time for our voices to be at the forefront of foreign policy. This is Alexandra Haidar, your podcast host. Today, we will talk again with Juanita Ingram, author, Hollywood producer, and filmmaker of her hit reality TV show, International Ingrams. This show covers the stories and lives of Black women living overseas in Asia. And this show is available on Amazon. We will discuss season two of her show and the challenges that Black women producers have telling stories with leading Black characters overseas. We all remember the fallout of Black Ariel from Disney's Little Mermaid. And what about whether or not Queen Cleopatra is Black on Netflix's Queen Cleopatra show? We will dive into these topics and more on Global Take. All right. Well, welcome back to the show, Miss Juanita Ingram. So good to reconnect with you on the Global Take podcast. And I see you in your second season of International Ingram. I got a chance to watch a few, some of your newer episodes. And I know that this second season is more about other expats than the Ingram family itself. Yes. So I just kind of wanted you to talk about that journey and how you, what the second season, what the idea behind it, and some of the future episodes that you might produce in the future.
Absolutely. So this season is really what I always envisioned the series to always be about. I mean, somebody had to bring the story to life, so I didn't mind it being my family, but it was never supposed to be my family only. Mm-hmm. I always wanted for the bigger picture of the series to showcase other Black people living abroad. When I first had the vision for the show, it wasn't even about me. It was about, I looked out, we used to have the Soul Food Sundays, and I looked out and saw like 35 other Black people, and the kids were running on the lawn and all of that. And it was me looking at them that gave me the inspiration of the show, just because we wanted to showcase how we were living, not we being me, but us. In the space. So we have 12 other Black expats on the show this season, both in Taiwan and in Singapore. So you'll see this season me move from Taiwan, because season one was all about us going from America, getting to Taiwan. And that's why I was so focused on my family, because of course we were the ones that were moving. But this time we're settling in, and you see some of the characters from season one and sort of expound upon their world dating. And that was another big thing this season that Kenan and I can't really talk about, because we are like super married. Like, it'll be 19 years in November.
Oh, we're like, congratulations. Yeah,
like, oh, thanks. But we're like white picket fence dog, two kids, you know, married. Like, we can't talk about, I don't even remember dating. Like, yeah. So we couldn't talk about that. Certainly not from a perspective of dating in the international scene and being Black. And what does that look like for Black women? How does it differ for Black men? What is it like in terms of interracial dating? And so we wanted to show other people and their journey, and Black women finding love in particular. Toy and Sean are a couple that are actually dear friends of mine. Mm-hmm. And I just love their story. I love their journey. And I love to see Black women being loved well. And so, you know, and the international date, I love it. I like the whole soft life. I want us to be cared for, loved, treated with respect, nurtured, honey, the whole tender season. Can we be tenderized? Okay. I want to see tenderization and all of the love. I do. And I love it. And I love seeing us not struggle with love, and for different ideas and avenues, just to have the dialogue, just to show what it looks like. And it's not always perfect. You know, you'll see Veronique is still single and struggling. It's not always easy. It's everybody's journey is different. And I wanted to show that difference. We have a couple on the show, the Champions, which I love that family dearly. Reason and his wife, Joelle. Joelle is Taiwanese. Reason is a Black man from Atlanta.
Oh yeah, Georgia. That was a trip. That was such a trip.
Was it? Yes. I mean, and Reason is such a, I mean, he allowed me to show. I was just like, bro, what were you thinking? But in his defense, at least he was honest about it. I don't know. I think he needs to stay on social media a little bit sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just a little bit. But I do think that the dialogue that he and Joel had about his mother-in-law, who's Taiwanese, in the first 6 months of their marriage, thinking that he was a drug dealer and a gangster. Wow. And, you know, the only reason why she thought that was because of the images that she saw in the media. And their daughter, Talia, who is beautiful, you know, gorgeous little girl. And the Taiwanese community, grandmas and aunties are just like, you know, oh, she's so dark. And I'm just like, when I looked at her, I wouldn't even know that the child was mixed. You know, it's just interesting colorism amongst a homogeneous group, amongst themselves, not even colorism toward Black people, but colorism amongst their own. It's a very interesting dialogue, an aspect of interracial marriages that you don't often hear those real conversations and dialogue, what it was really like. Because he was like, I don't know why this woman thought that I was going to beat her, I was going to cheat on her, that I was a gangster, and that I was selling drugs. And this man is like in tech, you know, and has lived in 16, he's lived in Asia for over 16 years, speaks fluent Mandarin, extremely intelligent. But this is what his mother-in-law thought of him. And so we have these deep conversations with other people in their lives, because I am proud to say that my life is not that dramatic and it's not that interesting to carry a whole nother season. I'm proud of that. You know, I'm like, that's good that I don't have that much drama going on in my life that I can carry a whole season again by myself. This is great. And we don't make up things, you know, we don't, it's not
scripted.
Typically drama. It's not scripted, unscripted drama, which is, you know, within the unscripted genre. It's interesting. I've sit on the Television Academy peer group for reality TV, and I'm a voting member of the Academy. I've been in the Academy now, I think like 4 years.
Okay. And congratulations on that too.
Thanks. Yeah. And I'm in the executive peer group now for reality TV. And it's interesting how scripted, unscripted can be. And it is equally interesting how, and I was intentional with this show about how Black-led casts are treated within that genre. You know, so oftentimes, and this is the reason why I created the show, one of the reasons was, it's a story that hasn't been told. As a storyteller, as a filmmaker, you always look for the story that hasn't been told, because it's rare. It's rare that we get that opportunity, rare that stories, you know, are new. But then also from a perspective of changing how the genre treats us and the fact that we don't get diversity for us in this genre. And what I mean by that is, so oftentimes their formula for entertainment is the same for us as Black people. So
argument, like, I think when you say that, think about that BET, HBCU reality show and the fighting with the rappers. I'm like, girl, you're going to college. Like, see, and that, down and that, for that show at least.
But for a minute, can you get through Alabama State without, are we doing all that? But, you know, it's like, I've been on set because I had clients in the entertainment space, in the unscripted reality space. And I've been on set and I've seen the producer go whisper in somebody's ear, go do this, and set some things up. I've seen the pre-production meetings like, okay, well, this person is going to fight with this person. Well, how do you know they're going to fight? And they haven't even spoken to each other all summer. What are we doing? It's very contrived. It's not real. But what they do for storyline, for drama for us, is often a repetitive approach to what is negative drama. So you can't just deal with the normal dramas that life presents. You know, when I was trying to pitch the show, I was like, well, life presents enough drama when you're living abroad. It's dramatic enough. You don't have to make up stuff. You don't have to have strife. And everybody used to ask me, what about the ensemble cast? And I never wanted to have an ensemble cast because I knew what they were going to do. Because ensemble cast to them equates who's fighting who. Instead of, who are we showcasing? Who are we exploring? What are we seeing? Because we as Black-led cast can't have just the day-to-day drama of life. as with like a Chrisley Knows Best. I don't know if have you ever watched Chrisley Knows Best?
No,
like with Todd Chrisley and his family. He's in jail right now, but
wow,
for not paying his tax or whatever they accused him of or convicted him of. I personally feel like Todd Chrisley is the best thing on television. He is entertaining. I personally feel like that white man is a black woman reincarnated. I don't know what happened. There's a black woman
entrance.
He has a black woman inside of Todd Chrisley, but it's a show about a white guy doing nothing, and it's just his family, and it's just their everyday lives. I think it was on USA, and it's the most entertaining. It's funny. The grandmother is hilarious. The mom and dad are funny, and they get to have shows about them just being. Mm. You know, Kim Kardashian and their lives. It's about a show about their day to day lives, and some stuff is a little contrived, but it's still just about them just being.
Yeah.
You get for other ethnic groups, you get everything from Todd Chrisley to Honey Boo Boo to Duck Dynasty to all of these different shows to showcase the breadth of what is whiteness.
Mm.
Whereas Black people are painted in such a monolithic manner within the unscripted genre, we are one dimensional. If you are successful, you're either a rapper or you are an athlete or someone in entertainment. You can't be somebody that just went to college. If you are, and heaven forbid you're Black and you're married, then there is an objective and an agenda to emasculate Black men, to tear down Black marriages. It's just that's repetitive. True.
Yeah, like I'm sorry to interrupt, but I was just thinking about love and marriage, Huntsville.
Love and marriage. Yeah, and it's there's nothing wrong with the show. Do these type of things happen within our community? Absolutely. Do we go to, I've seen a fight or two. I went to an HBCU. I saw a fight or two. Mm-hmm. Do we fight? Sure we do. That's not all that we do. Mm-hmm. So if you only show us repetitively mm-hmm. in one dimension, that is a stereotype. And that is dangerous for them to put that forth for a particular group of people, because that is why characters are cast like Reason and his wife. Mm-hmm. And she said, my mother thought that of him because that's all she sees on reality TV. That's all she sees in the media. So these shows, they really do impact how we are handled or sometimes mishandled on a global scale, because you're not showing diversity within our group of people. Not all of us, you know, I've just put out this advert for the Academy voters because they're voting right now for the Emmys. And I said, we're not a monolithic group. We don't all handle conflict the same. We don't all live in the same place. We don't all, our success doesn't look the same. We're not all the same, but you see the same sort of cast type in the unscripted genre. So that's really the reason I wanted to showcase so many other Black expats who are different from me, teachers, digital nomads, people who had come, and we had military families on this season.
Yeah, I didn't finish the whole season. I had to get to that part.
Singapore brings in the military families. So when we moved here, I had to get approval from the Pentagon to have them included in the show. And I was talking to the military officers and they were like, we weren't expecting this. We were expecting to say no because of what we've seen with Black people in unscripted television. We were not expecting this. You don't expect it because we don't get it. We don't get shows that are family friendly for us in unscripted reality TV. The last time I saw one was what, Ron DMC, Ron's House? That had to be 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that one was pretty good. That was a good show, actually.
It was.
It was really good.
I liked it. I liked his little confessions at the end with him in the bathtub. Not because he was in the bathtub, but just conceptually, it was a nice way to end the episode. Yeah. I didn't want to, like, please don't move those bubbles, but you know, so good. But it was a great show.
It was a great show.
And we don't get that often enough. It will start in the right direction, but it always ends. And we don't shy away from conflict either. I mean, when I moved to Singapore, one of the main things was trying to make new friends because I had such a close, genuine, close friendship with everyone in Taiwan. Those people are my friends. Like, they're not just cast members. This was my real friend group. You move to Singapore and I'm trying to make new friends. You're not everybody's cup of tea all the time. And again, just because you're Black and you're abroad, that doesn't mean you're going to get along with everybody. But and
I like the way you have like this sisterhood group, these sisters. Yeah. Luncheons with your friends. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. I'm gonna.
It was good. But in trying to replicate that in Singapore, you'll see later in the season, gets a little dicey. Everybody doesn't get along. But the way that I didn't shy away from it because I think it's great to show Black women that may not necessarily hit it off initially, miscommunications happen, but can we deal with it differently? Can we deal with it in a genuine way that is authentic? I disagree with people all the time. I have never thrown a drink in anyone's face. I've never flipped the table. I'm not saying that I've never fought anybody, but not in since my 20s. I mean, I'm grown. Everybody doesn't deal with conflict in that way. Mm. So we don't shy away from conflict. I mean, there's a character, Tiffany and I, we did not get off on the right foot. We had a very deep disagreement, but for once we got to delve into the why. Where are we operating from when we hear things with the ears of trauma, as opposed to being able to really hear somebody? Can Black women be multidimensional? Can we be traumatized? Can we be full? Can we be human? Can we make mistakes and maybe misunderstand where someone was coming from? Can we sit down like civilized human beings and have a real dialogue about, okay, girl, I didn't appreciate that. I didn't understand where you were coming from. And hey, I didn't even say that. You misread that. You mistook that. And can we deal with things that don't end up with us throwing a drink in each other's face? Because everybody doesn't handle conflict that way. So the season gets really deep.
Yeah, I noticed that with the season. It's more like those big hitting issues, like, you know, the racism and even being Black and Asian, people moving over because they don't want to sit with you. And that's a whole nother conversation. No, you were representing Singapore, correct? You were representing for Mrs. Universe. So I just want to know, like, what was it like representing Black beauty on a global stage, and even more so in Asia, representing the Asian country in that competition?
You know, it was great. I love the system that I'm with. It was very fair. It was a very transparent system in terms of at nationals representing Blackness and Black beauty in Asia has been interesting. Singapore is very diverse, I will say that. And if I had to represent any Asian country, because in the Mrs. sector, it's purely residence. It's purely where you reside. They don't look at nationality. They don't care, you know, what passport you hold. It's purely based on residency. And so initially I was casted, and they do it sometimes if they don't have like a state director or a country director, they'll do casting calls. And initially I was casted where I was residing at the time was in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you'll see in the season, that came with an interesting response. And so there can be at times intentional or sometimes unintentional forms of anti-Blackness, especially that attaches itself when beauty becomes a component. Sometimes, you know, we like to, or people like to say, well, it's because you're a foreigner, Juanita, or because you're an expat, or, you know, you're not from Taiwan, but you don't have an issue. And I talked about this on the show. There's never an issue that comes into play when foreign athletes are recruited to play on at Taiwanese NBA team or baseball or anything like that. You will have Black men dribble that ball up and down the court, slap Taiwan on his chest, and he may have only been in that country for 2 weeks. And you will cheer and you'll be happy if he brings home the gold and helps your team to win. But why is it when you inject beauty? Because to me, pageantry is a sport. It is a sport. Yeah, yeah. It's like cheerleading. It's like, you know, it's a competition. It's a sport. Mm-hmm. But why is it that when we see, especially with Black women, the concept of beauty being the component, that everybody wants to be such a nationalist, everybody, well, you're not this or you're not that. And especially because within the Mrs. genre, it is common, it is well known, this is residency. That when, you know, we're not running for Congress, It's just a pageant. That's the other thing. I'm not trying to run the House of Parliament, honey. Just a pageant. Just a pageant. But you ruffle feathers, especially in this particular continent, I think, as it relates to subconscious, ingrained, colonized result derivative forms of anti-Blackness that are steeped within the psyche at times. Now, again, Singapore is a bit unique. There's no perfect place, but Singapore is extremely diverse. You'll see the difference between my experience of anti-Blackness in Taiwan versus being here. Honestly, just breathed a sigh of relief, like, whew, because nobody cared. Nobody jumps. I've never had anybody in Singapore jump when they see me. No, that never happens. It's kind of like, they call it the London of Asia for a reason. Mm-hmm. It is extremely, it's like being in London. Nobody's going to jump because they see a Black person in London. Everybody's in London and everybody's in Singapore. So if I had to represent a country, I think I was very fortunate and blessed that this was it, because you'll see the reaction, not of all in Taiwan, because there was one person in Taiwan that was like, oh, I think it's fine. But, you know, the concept of I mean, we see it play out with the Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
And their response to Halle Bailey being Black and it tanked, you know, in certain Asian countries.
That's crazy. Like, I guess we're going into the entertainment section. Like, yeah, what was your impression of that? Like, how was it marketed and why did it tank, Little Mermaid?
I'm not surprised it didn't tank.
They didn't really want to push it. Like,
I don't think it was marketing. I think it is. CNN reported on it. Guardian reported it. It was such a racist backlash to a Black woman being cast as Ariel, and that again goes back to the issue that people have with Blackness and beauty and femininity and Black women in particular. Because again, no problem with Black athletes dribbling, you know, China will recruit Black folks to play on their team in basketball. Other people, you know, I just came back from Seoul, South Korea, and beautiful country, beautiful place. I could feel racism. I could feel it. And the subtle thing, and the, I'm going to ignore you and act like you're not standing here in line. And the, I'm going to pass you and act like you're not a real person. I did a photo shoot while I was there. My photographer was like, hey, you're visiting. Have you experienced any racism lately while you're here? And I'm like, I don't know. What do you think? And he's like, I think it's a very racist place. But he's Indian. You know, he's from India. And he's like, there are times when taxis will pass me, won't let me get in the car. From his landlord making comments about his friends. His best friend is a black woman. And his landlord was like, don't bring her around here anymore. So there are issues that exist in society in those places. I don't think anybody that lives in those places, especially Black people, were surprised that the movie did not do well, because we experience those real microaggressions that still take place. And again, there's no perfect place. And I told him, I said, you know, it's hard for me to criticize any other place when my home country is not the poster child for Kumbaya. So it's kind of hard, you know. So there's that.
But we do live in we've come a long way as a country. I guess in those, you know, a lot of other countries, from my travels, it just seemed like everyone thinks the United States is the most racist place, and they don't have any racism in their own country. That's what I'm learning too, like with the how Black people are treated overseas. So that's really unfortunate, because I mean, it did well here, and it's interesting how they picked up American racism on social media for that movie and all of the backlash she received here, and how that spread it over to Asia. Because I think if we embraced this new Ariel, I just couldn't even understand what was the big to that.
Well, sometimes
she was in the Caribbean. Like, people in Caribbean are Black and Latino. Like, it made sense that she was Black.
Well, Sebastian is Jamaican. So yeah. I don't understand. It's a Jamaican crab. And he always has been a Jamaican crab. Right. So I don't understand. We obviously dive in psychologically into a make-believe character whose memories aren't real. And so I just don't understand why it's an issue. But what is an issue is beauty and Black. Ariel is a beautiful mermaid. She can't be a beautiful mermaid. It is that is the issue. It is colorism. And sometimes that Western mentality, be it through social media or be it just inherently ingrained within the culture that has been colonized. You know, you see it as a result of colonization. And sometimes amongst the expat circle, we'll say, you know, these type of areas, very white worshiping. And they worship it. And then, so if there is a movement that says this is wrong, then they will tack on to that because they have their own ingrained ideas that are steeped in anti-Blackness, not necessarily racial, but sometimes color and sometimes both.
When you're in Asia, there was like a Black Lives Matter protest. Mm-hmm. So I thought like the consciousness of the people there would accept a Black Ariel, but I guess it didn't translate.
Well, that was in Taiwan.
Okay.
I don't think you saw that happening in China. You certainly didn't see it. I don't know if China did it or not, but I don't think that there was one in South Korea. I don't want to misspeak, but in Taiwan, there was a peace rally that was held there. And I do think sometimes it can be generational. You know, if you look at people who are 40 and under, my experience is that you don't necessarily see as deeply steeped mentality in terms of anti-Blackness, but sometimes it's still there because they learn from their parents. I think during that time when the world, you know, was dealing with George Floyd and the whole Black Lives Matter movement was something that was a capsule in time. And the same way in America right now that I personally feel like we're seeing the backlash from that. Because, you know, at one point in time in 2020, everybody wanted to be an ally. Then it got real performative. And then it became a noun to describe something and not a verb. Mm-hmm. And the same way we're seeing a reverse of things in the U.S., it happens globally in other places as well, where people are not really as committed to being and embracing others as we just saw just 3 years ago. And so I'm not surprised at what happened in those locations with the film. I am, however, it's interesting. I had a similar experience. You know, you see Hallie going around and these little girls having these emotional crying spells and they're like embracing her and they, you know, representation matters and we see why it's so necessary. And it's when I first became Mrs. Universe, I went to an elementary and middle school in Long Island, New York, during February, during Black History Month.
Okay.
And I walked in the auditorium with 500 little girls and they were screaming. You know, I walked in and I'm like, oh my gosh, you think I was like a Usher somebody walking in. They were like, sign my arm. You know, it was kind of crazy. And then this one little girl looked up at me with tears in her eyes and she said, you look like me.
Oh, that is so sweet.
And so, And so I was like, I understand how Haley feels when these little girls look up to you and they're like rushing you. And it means so much to them to see themselves in you in that role. Or whether it's Ariel or Mrs. Universe, it matters so much that these other issues, whether it's a person in Taiwan that says I shouldn't be representing an Asian country, or whether it's an Asian country that doesn't embrace the entire movie, it doesn't matter long term because you know the why of why you did it, and the representation still matters. But you definitely have these experiences that are cultural and specific to certain regions, for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then moving on, like with Queen Killer, she don't look like, you know, the Queen Victoria or some of the other European queen. There's something a little different about her picture than the other one. So it kind of makes you wonder, but I was just curious to know, like, you know, just how Black, how that show has amplified Black actors in Britain. I know you were pursuing your acting career while you were in London. So just curious to know, like, you know, just your connections there and how people took that show and everything.
You know, I'm still connected there because I'm there at least 2 to 3 times a year because I still run Dress for Success out of London. And I'm actually looking to expand my production company into London next year. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of colleagues that are there. I think it's brilliant. You know, I think the reception has been really well. It's interesting, though. I have had some people that I know in the UK who are not Black, who have asked me, because I think they feel safe asking me. You know how some people, you're their Black friend. So they ask you all the questions, like everything short of, can I touch your hair?
Right.
And they asked me, like, initially they asked me, like, what do you feel about, like, they just seem to be putting a lot of Black actors in roles that, you know, it's just such a stretch. And I knew that they were talking about Bridgerton. They were talking about Queen Charlotte. Well, this was Bridgerton. Queen Charlotte hadn't even come out. Mm-hmm. But the concept of seeing so many Black characters as it relates to the royals and in those particular settings, it was just a bit much for them. And they were asking me, did I think it was really unnecessary and just seemed like really extreme? And just so unnecessary that they would just try to push all of these Black characters in places where it seemed like they were just doing it just to do it. And did I think that it was extreme and a bit overkill was the word. And I said, well, no, I don't think that. Well, it just seems like all of a sudden there are so many Black actors being pushed forward. And I said, well, you only feel that way because all along, you had white actors that were pushed forward. So that became your norm. Mm-hmm. And why should it matter if they're the best actor for the role? Why are you asking that? Can you ask yourself, what is it stirring up in you that it bothers you that that's being done?
Mm-hmm.
And they never answered. So, you know, it's one of the things where seeing us in spaces where you haven't seen us before can be triggering. And sometimes I'm not sure that they even know that they're going to be triggered because they've been so accustomed to seeing themselves exclusively in certain spaces that it's not conscious that it becomes triggering for them to see us take up space. So it's been interesting. It's an interesting observation.
Yeah, I mean, I was able to go to London last year and I went to Bristol and went to the British Museum and picked up this book on the Black and Caribbean history of Great Britain. And there's a lot of Black history in Britain. Like you had Black people who were, some of them, very few, wasn't that many, but they were part of that. Aristocratic society, if you will. That have made it, and you know, some of them were part of the abolitionist movement, and some were former slaves. But I think there was one lady that was Belle, that movie Belle. She kind of lived in that era. So, I mean, there are stories like that, and it's probably more, but unfortunately, they're not written. So, we know to write
or they were written and were never picked up. You know, I know people who have tried for years to really delve into Windrush and what really took place, in the UK. It's just, it's a very deep history of Blackness there. You just haven't always seen it. So it becomes their norm. So again, it's like with our show, initially, some of the backlash that we received, I just didn't know that happy Black people would be that triggering. Like, who knew?
Yeah.
Like seeing happy blackness would like trigger some folks. Like, what? What do you not like rainbows and puppies too? Like, who has a problem with it? But you'd be surprised. It's because we are in spaces that we ordinarily have not taken up spacing. And so just like with being Mrs. Universe, everybody's not happy that there's a Black woman that's Mrs. Universe, because that space has never been occupied by us before. Mm. So it's something that is triggering because there's a certain level of entitlement that comes with normality. It becomes your norm. You're used to this. This is supposed, Ariel is supposed to be white, of course, because that's the norm. So I'm triggered when I see something different because I'm not used to that. And I have a sense of entitlement that I'm supposed to dictate. It is supposed to make me feel comfortable. It's supposed to be what I want it to be.
It's amazing the power of people like yourself, producers, directors who are telling our stories and just have such an influence on the history, like how the history is being told. Because now with Queen Charlotte, that makes me want to pick up and really learn more about her history and her. Yeah. And that's what books, that's what these movies are supposed to be. They're supposed to try to spark interest.
It's always been the catalyst for conversations of change, mm-hmm. and dialogues that we are not ready to have outright as a society. Art always brings forth the conversations that we are not ready to have outside of fantasy. Mm-hmm. Even with reality TV, it's far more comfortable to watch other people deal with that than for us to deal with it ourselves, or maybe it helps us to be brave enough to deal with it in our own reality. But with Queen Charlotte, it sparks a conversation that needed to be had. I picked up on the nuances in that story when she was getting her portrait painted. And the king's mother, the king's, it was an episode. I don't, spoiler alert, if you don't want to, mm-hmm. If you don't want to be spoiled.
That's okay. Go ahead and spoil.
Yeah. But there's one point where the king's mother is sitting there while Queen Charlotte's getting her portrait painted. And Queen Charlotte looks over at the portrait and the painter's like, what do you think? And she's like, I think I look too pale. You should paint me darker, paint me my real color. And the king's mother says, no, paint her lighter.
Mm.
So are we looking at real pictures of Charlotte, even in what is in his history? Because there was a hint to that, and that came from somewhere.
Yeah.
Did they paint her the right color? You just don't know. You don't know what the agenda was. But I picked up on that too, because, that speaks to the debate about, was she really Black? Was she of more descent? Who, is that really being able to do? Again, the debate, but it's a conversation that we can't always have outside of art, outside of film. It's everything from body of work of Ava DuVernay to Issa Rae that talks about single Black woman. Mm-hmm. And, can we have these conversations and dialogue? I love all forms of storytelling. So especially for us and our narratives and owning our stories, because you can sometimes tell, though, when there are Black writers in the room and when there are not.
Yeah, you can. You're starting to tell for sure. And that made me think about even with Queen Cleopatra, with Jada Pinkett Smith, her docuseries, and that brought in a lot of controversy as well. And I thought about even your show, there was some point where people like you said, they were upset that you guys were, showcasing, wealth or showcasing Black women being nurtured or Black women being, pampered, God forbid. So just kind of
heaven forbid.
To talk about, that backlash of playing Cleopatra.
When women ruled with unparalleled power, as warriors, queens, mothers of nations. And there is none among them more iconic than Cleopatra.
I would die for Egypt. What would you die for? I am Isis. I am a god.
As long as she's alive, she is the pharaoh.
My father's will names me co-ruler of Egypt.
Julius Caesar is aware that Cleopatra is one of the best educated women in the Mediterranean.
He wants to be king to Cleopatra's queen.
There is no future without the past.
She was using these relationships with Mark Antony to protect herself and her country.
There is no Rome without Egypt.
Cleopatra was trying to save the country that she loved from destruction.
Did what I had to do to protect what is mine.
This is a woman exercising power.
Cleopatra was a Ptolemaic ruler. The very first Ptolemy is a general of Alexander the Great.
It's possible that she was an Egyptian.
I imagine her to have curly hair like me and a similar skin color.
I remember my grandmother saying to me, I don't care what they tell you in school, Cleopatra was black.
She has become an icon.
I am a god. Queen of kings.
Her story resonates with every woman.
Being portrayed as black. I mean, she was African. Let's just put it out there. She was Egyptian in Africa. Now, her skin color, okay, we'll let you debate on that, but she was African. I'm Egyptian.
Well, brown skin. They're very brown skin. And I don't know. First of all, colorism is so alive. Well, the fact that they would debate her skin color, who cares? Why should it matter? You know, it's just that toxicity is something that is just so ever prevalent from both sides, because it's not always just, sometimes it's us that has a problem with us. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's us that plays into colorism at times. That just, and I say us in terms of Black people in the African diaspora as a whole, can have some deep-rooted colorism issues within our own community. And that is sad and frustrating. Yeah, I relate to the backlash. I didn't see it coming. You don't foresee it. I didn't really think that a show about a Black family that went to college, worked really hard, got married, stayed married. I didn't really think that would be that big of an issue. A couple of the comments, though, they did take down from Amazon that were really race-based. Mm-hmm. But some things that were said, and in terms of like, you know, I paused the show for a while because, you know, when people are making threats towards you, you kind of rethink some things like, okay, is this really worth it? Like, is it this serious? But the majority of them, they didn't really have a problem with my husband.
Hmm.
The issue of, because my husband's, his storyline is his life. It's true. He's frugal and he's cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't really have, he is. Now, I love my husband. I love Katie Dill. He is hilarious, but he is so cheap. You know what I'm saying? So if he is. We are never going to be broke. We are never going to be broke. We aren't. That man is, he is cheap. I say he's frugal. That's my loving way of saying he's cheap. But we'll never be broke. And so, you know, there's balance to life. The issue that they had in terms of some of the comments that were made, like, oh, it's just a Black family being rich. And, oh, you know, why do you have to focus on the B, on the Bentley that she's driving? Well, first of all, it's a scene in the car. It's a steering wheel. I mean, I don't know what else. How am I going to drive without a steering wheel? I don't know. Make it make sense. But the issue, again, you know, why does she have so many red bottoms in her closet? It's my closet. Where am I supposed to get dressed? Never becomes an issue, though, for Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Never becomes an issue for any of the other white-centric casted shows that are women who are successful. Never becomes an issue. So it becomes an issue when it's Black women, because it wasn't my husband, because he wasn't driving the Bentley. I was. He didn't have red box.
Oh, it kind of coming after you in a way.
It's me, but it's Black women. It's the audacity for us to be successful, to have luxury, you know, and not apologize for it. I've been an attorney now for 20 something years. If I can't, I should be able to drive whatever I want to drive, buy whatever I want to buy. I can't do that, something's wrong in life. I made some bad choices. You know, some bad decisions. I've been working 20 something my years as a lawyer. And, you know, I $500 an hour and I can't buy a pair of shoes. Like, seriously. It was an interesting response to Black wealth and Black people being comfortable or more than comfortable, and to our success being something that was not typical. He is not an athlete. I am not a rapper. How dare you put forth, it makes people feel uncomfortable. And it's not always, some of it was from people who were not Black, but some of it was from Black people, which is also heartbreaking and sad that we have become so conditioned to seeing us in a particular condition that you either get the uppity Negro backlash, or you get the who does she think she is backlash, which is, here's the thing, it's fine. Most of those things, who cares? Because you can't please everybody. There's a show for everybody. Not everybody's going to like what you put out. Who cares? When it gets into like the personal threats, that's when you're just a little taken aback sometimes. But, you know, you're in the public eye. It's par for the course. It is what it is. I think that's why representation matters all the more, because that's why I tell people I'm just trying to normalize it. Because the fact that it is so odd for people to see Black folks living abroad, or to see success, or to see us just, or a show about us just being, when you have Todd Chrisley that's doing absolutely nothing. And it's hilarious. It's a good show. It also takes a lot more creativity from a producing perspective to make what is everyday entertainment. I think it's lazy producing sometimes what they do with us in terms of, okay, you know, it's going to be dramatic and it's going to be interesting if somebody fights or if someone pulls a wig, but can you get creative? Can you make going to the grocery store and buying something that you can't read the label and it's in another language, can you make that interesting?
Yeah.
Can you make that experience something that's worth watching? Can you make getting your kids into school or not getting them into school? Can you tell that story in a way that captures the audience, that takes skill? And sometimes I think, and I love my colleagues, like I said, I'm in the Television Academy. It's not a stab at any of my colleagues or any peers, but it takes far more creativity to make magic with authenticity than it does to fabricate things, and to the point where we're getting almost scripted, unscripted television.
Wow. And then you mentioned like in your show, like it has even impacted like your distribution deals. And like, I just think about the backlash with the Netflix series, Queen Cleopatra, like, you know, like how the Egyptian government was kind of going after Netflix. And can you talk a little bit about that and just like how you were able to overcome that? Or are you still dealing with that?
I could talk about it to a certain extent, but I signed an NDA and got paid, so I'm good.
Okay.
I dealt with it. Because there are certain things, that you can and cannot do. And tortious interference of contracts is not something that you should do. And sometimes people think that they have the freedom of expression and freedom of safety. And, you know, when things are race-based, you don't have a right to do that in any setting, in any form. So, I deal with teenagers a lot that are in bullying environments. And unfortunately, we don't grow up a lot of times as individuals. But they're broken people. Only people that do that kind of thing are broken people. I mean, again, who doesn't like a positive show? And if you don't like it, you know how much effort it takes to write something negative instead of just scrolling it takes a lot of effort. So these are broken individuals. You can't please everybody. I tell people all the time, I did not make this show for everybody. I didn't. I made this show primarily for us. I make no apologies about that because I want to, the best compliment I ever received, this grandmother inboxed me and said that she sat her grandkids down in front of my show, didn't have to worry about what they were watching, could walk away. And when she came back, her grandchildren wanted to travel. That's why I made the show.
Wow.
I had somebody write the other day on Instagram. It's a black guy. And he was like, you know, I'm just now getting into season two. Your family gave us and my family the inspiration to know that we could do this. And we're planning on living abroad as well. He's got a family of four or five. And he and his wife and his three children are planning on moving. They've been traveling more. And he said, you know, your show gave us the courage and the example to know that we could do this. And we've been inspired to keep pushing and keep going forward. I made the show for them. Even if we're on the Emmy ballot, if we never get a nomination, I didn't make the show for the Academy. I didn't make it for my peers. I made it for the little girls. You know, I didn't go out for Mrs. Universe for anybody, except for that little girl in that auditorium that looked up and told me, you look like me. That's why I'm here. So I want us to be inspired to see us in certain places. And if it so happens to clarify some things or be a form of positive change and entertaining for other people, and it's something that they can sit down and laugh about, or if it helps to see that we aren't all gangsters, that we are for reasons, mother-in-law, if that helps her, great. But that's not my job. Our job is not to convince people that we are worthy. Our job is to just be. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to create a show that normalized us just being for us, for our entertainment, so that we can be, you know, what A Different World did for higher education.
Oh, yes. It was phenomenal. I mean, I went to HBCU.
I did, too, because of A Different World. I want this show to be that for the Black community in terms of our ability and inspiration and aspirations of travel and living abroad and just seeing the world outside of where we are and understanding that we belong any place the feet and our soles of our feet tread, and just knowing that we are okay wherever we are, to bloom where you're planted. Mm-hmm. So I hope this show does what A Different World did for us, that this show does that for us in the travel expat genre in that lane, in that sense.
Yeah. So. Projects and her, you're launching a new book. So,
yes.
Yeah.
So yes, Heavy is the Head, comes out next year. Fingers crossed. Okay. I keep pushing it back for business reasons. But I do have a series called, Beyond Beauty, that because no one really ever talks about the Mrs. Pageant circuit. Everybody knows about Teen and Miss, M-I-S-S, but nobody's ever really shown anything about the world of Mrs. Pageants. People didn't even know that there was a Mrs. Universe. There's a Mrs. America. Know. Yeah, a Mrs. World, a Mrs. America. There's a Mrs. Everything for every genre. But the Mrs. World has rarely been talked about. People don't know what it entails. And then also when you're at this level of your life, you're in pageantry for a different reason. It is beyond beauty. It's beyond you needing validation. Most of us are very focused on doing work within the community, doing certain things. But then the path to get here is very different than competing in Miss and pageants. It's similar, but it's very different. And so I wanted to show that journey. I actually started this project 10 years ago. When my first time I went to Mrs. Universe 10 years ago and didn't win. And it was some things that I saw culturally. When we talk about international pageant systems and different cultures, it's just a very different world that I wanted to sort of pull the veil back, let people see a little bit of that. So that'll be coming out at the end of the year. And it should be very interesting because even my year as Mrs. Universe is not what people probably think that it is. It is in some regards, but there's a whole lot that I haven't talked about and haven't shown, but I will.
Okay. Well, congratulations on all your projects. This has been a fantastic conversation, and you know, thank you so much for joining Global Take. And we're excited for all the great and new exciting things that Mrs. Juanita Ingram is going to be doing in the years to come. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and thank you for creating this space.
Yes, thank you.
And that does it for us on Global Take, where we discuss global issues from the Black perspective. If you enjoyed this episode, please like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. You can find us at Black Professionals and International Affairs at www.iabpia.org. You can also find all podcasts on Spotify as well as Apple Podcasts. So please like and leave a comment. Thank you.